Welcome to Kaona Stories, the show by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and Kaona Stories producer.
I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark's AME Church and senior partner at Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, deputy attorney general with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I express are solely my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And I'm Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
And we have a special guest joining us today.
Yeah, I'm Craig Helmstetter. I'm the managing partner of the APM Research Lab. It's a nonpartisan research and analysis division of American Public Media.
Thank you for joining us. We've worked together a little bit in the past when Kaona Stories was connected with NPR. And we're glad to have you join us, especially with the latest data that came out. Can you just kind of give us a little bit of recap of what that is and how you guys went about that?
Sure, yeah. I'm super excited to be here. I'm really honored to be a guest on this show. As you mentioned, I've had various contact with different folks on this group in the past, and I think this is really a perfect group. I've been really looking forward to this conversation to share some of the findings of the survey with you all, and to really to hear the reactions to the survey. I remember when we started with the APM Research Lab back in 2017, one of our first big projects was a different survey with NPR News, and I think Anthony, you were a guest with me on Tom Weber's show to talk about, help digest the results of that survey, and that was a great conversation. So I'm looking forward to this one as well.
I've continued to get every now and then folks who are upset with me for a comment I made when I was on, referencing that last I checked, there were no black churches in Lake Wobegon, and there's some folks who are very upset by that.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Anthony, were they upset because there are no black churches in Lake Wobegon, or were they upset because you made the comment?
I think it's because I made the comment.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, and you've added Reverend, to my knowledge anyway, you've added Reverend to your title since then. So
yep.
you're helping to solve that problem, I guess. That's great. Great. So one of the criticisms that we got, that survey was intended to look at rural and urban differences in the state. That was in 2017. And one of the, rightful criticisms that we got back then was, well, what about differences between racial and ethnic groups? And so it was, ever since then, it's been a dream of ours to be able to field a survey that looked at different racial and ethnic groups and tried to, we've kind of gone through a racial reckoning here in our state and across the country. And I think it behooves all of us to understand each other better. And so we were able to, we got funding. I should always thank the funders, from the Arts and Legacy Commission, as well as the Bush Foundation. And the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundations to help field this major effort to do a survey. And we did something that we think is really unique and really unprecedented in the state, and that is to field a survey that not only represents the state as a whole, but represents six different racial and ethnic groups. So we have representative samples of Black Minnesotans, Indigenous Minnesotans, Latinx Minnesotans, Asian Minnesotans. In the Asian group, we actually have a subsample of Hmong Minnesotans, as well as other Asians, not including Hmong Minnesotans. And then finally, white Minnesotans for the comparison group. So, rarely, I think maybe the first time I got to know you, Don, was when I was working with Minnesota Compass at the Wilder Foundation. I was given a presentation to DHS when you were there, and you were asking me, well, where in some of the data I was presenting, it doesn't look like you have American Indian or Native Americans represented. And I said, yeah, unfortunately, it's just too common that we just don't have the numbers in our data to adequately represent what's going on with the indigenous population. And, you kind of called me out on that, rightfully so.
Well, actually, I remember that presentation. It was you, and I forget the name of the other person that was there with you. And actually, it was another employee of DHS that actually asked the question. I won't say who it was. It was a female But what happened is that it was your response. And the response you said was that, you know, and we know that our numbers are make up, you know, we make up less than 1.8% of the population. But when you use the terminology you guys use when you collect data, your response was that our numbers are so small that we become statistically insignificant. And to actually hear someone say that when you're working for the Department of Human Services, that's a hard pill. And I mean, we understand statistically that that happens. But it was because you actually said it got the reaction.
That was a very poor choice of terminology at that time. And so I still apologize for that. Of course, the risk is that if we have, you know, too small a number of any one group in any kind of survey or data set, and we try to say that these, you know, 12 people represent the opinions or experiences of all of that group, that just doesn't fly in the kind of work that we're doing. And so sometimes there's a danger, you know, there's more of a danger of misrepresenting than, and so we just try to avoid doing that. But I guess the point of that, you know, again, apologies for that in the past, but it always is helpful for people to, you know, give us constructive criticism so we can, you know, continue to forge on and do better. And here we actually had a chance to do better. You know, thanks to the funders, we had enough resources actually to go after, you know, as scientifically representative a sample as possible of these different groups, including the indigenous population that lives here in the States. So, you know, we would have loved to do something even better, you know, just talking about the indigenous population, we would love to have a representative sample of the different tribes in Minnesota, for example, to even drill down further. But at least we got to this level, you know, and it's again, it's almost never happens that we have representative samples of all six of these groups in one survey done here in Minnesota. So we're pretty proud of that. And I think what's more important is kind of the information and data that's coming out of the survey and that I'm really interested in hearing your responses to.
When I looked at the report, I know the first question was a proportion of perception of people from those various groups you talked about, whether or not they perceived they experienced discrimination. But then the other questions were actually asking them if they experienced discrimination. So I think there's a difference.
Yeah, it was so the part actually the survey, so the results, I think the specific results that we'll at least start to talk about are sort of one of many chapters of results that we've issued from the survey, and this sort of chapter or the section that we're talking about mostly, I think, here today has to do with discrimination. And so we also ask people questions about their experiences with COVID, with the schools, with, you know, a variety of, we actually asked some really good news stories. The next thing that we'll be publishing is a report about, you know, what do you think is going great with your community? So that would be another kind of fruitful discussion. That's the next report coming out. But this one here on discrimination, what we were doing is replicating some questions that were done in a national kind of a landmark survey that was done back in 2017 on the national level. And how that survey approached it was to ask people, just as you were saying, Don, you know, do you, let's say if there was a Black respondent on the other end of the line, do you perceive that there is discrimination against by the police against other Black Minnesotans? Yes or no? And then the follow-up was, have you yourself personally experienced discrimination by the police because of your race or ethnicity? Yes or no? And so it was both that perception and then the personal experience. And of course, people perceive a high level of discrimination, and then a sort of a subset of that have actually experienced the discrimination themselves. But the nice thing, of course, about replicating these questions from a national survey is to be able to compare, well, how does, you know, what are the experiences here in Minnesota compared to the national population.
And is that different? I mean, compared to the national population, what is Minnesota's numbers comparatively?
Well, if you think about, so we asked about police, as I just mentioned, we asked about employment and we asked about housing. So those are three questions. Then we actually asked, there was a first question about, do you believe discrimination exists in general? And so we asked those perception questions and then four other, you know, personal experience questions. So we asked everybody those eight questions. So if you're following my math, we have eight questions. And the national survey only had four groups. So eight times four, you know, 32, we had 32 comparisons. We had for Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and Asian populations. And so if we have those 32 those 32 comparisons, in none of those comparisons did Minnesota fare better. In none of those comparisons were either the perceptions or experiences lower than the nation as a whole. And in fact, in 15 of those comparisons, Minnesota fared worse. And so that's what I'm really interested in digging into with you guys is, you know, I'm a white guy and I have experience. I was born and raised here in Minnesota. And so I'm a longtime Minnesotan. You know, I'm also a sociologist. So I obviously recognize that there discrimination exists and so on, but you know, the results to me were kind of surprising. You know, everybody talks about Minnesota nice and Minnesota being a progressive state, but here our results show that we're at least as bad as the rest of the nation. And in many cases, worse than the rest of the nation when it comes to these measures of discrimination.
You've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Halee Lee with crew members Anthony Galloway, Don Eubanks, and Luz Maria Frias, and our special guest, Craig Helmstetter. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
There's a couple. You know, in looking through the different reports, you know, there's a couple that I found fascinating. But the great thing about the layout for those who follow the link is that there's a couple of summary graphs that kind of tell the big picture together. So once you dig down deeper, you can go more into it. But I'm looking at the proportion experiencing racial or ethnic discrimination, right? The perception piece, you know, there are things that are definitely not surprising there, particularly in perceptions of white Minnesotans, particularly when you break it down amongst Democrat and Republican, how those perceptions change, even though it doesn't gel necessarily with the experience data. And so I found that fascinating. But in looking at that, I thought it was interesting here that you make a very important point to separate Hmong experiences from the category of Asian. And this is something that we talk about a lot, especially in the school space, because oftentimes you'll have aggregate data with Asian as a pan ethnicity, but Southeast Asians have a very different experience than some of their other counterparts. And so in pulling that out, particularly experiencing racial or ethnic discrimination, you see that the rates of experiencing, whether it's racial slurs, employment, police, or housing, or policing, are different than the pan ethnic grouping. And so I just thought that was interesting that call out was there. One of the questions I had is around the BIPOC category. Just in terms of the methodology.
Can I just make a quick comment about taking the Hmong and getting data on that? I think that was so important, and I really appreciated seeing that because, right, you know, there was a story that just came out about a PhD candidate, a doctoral candidate, who tried to apply for a program for underrepresented communities, and she's Hmong American, and she was told that she didn't come from an underrepresented community because the data that they were going on grouped all Asians together, including, you know, Asians who have been here for many generations. They didn't separate the newer arrivals or you know, Southeast Asians from other Asians. And so, you know, even though was Hmong American, she was told she didn't qualify because she's not from an underrepresented community. And so seeing this research and these surveys done and, you know, taking out the Hmong community and getting the data on that, I thought I really appreciated that.
I'm so glad the two of you, Anthony and Hali, called it out, because that was one of my big observations initially as well, is the importance of disaggregating the data so that we don't mislead people, right? And Craig, you focus on that early on when you were speaking about the indigenous population. We know that there are the newer arrivals of Asian, meaning the Hmong, in our community in Minnesota in particular, who are still struggling as much as the rest of, you know, the newer immigrants who have come to Minnesota. And Hali is correct with the overrepresentation. If you look at colleges, and in particular, a specialized field like medicine, and I happen to know a little bit about it because my daughter is currently a medical student, she'll be the first one to say that the data, when she was going through the application process, looked at Asians in particular were overly represented in admissions or applications to medical school, and therefore quite a number of folks then, and mostly given folks that were, for example, international students who weren't born and raised here in the States, but have come on as students through their visa program, and being able then to benefit from the different programs internally, but disadvantaging then those who have been raised here through the generations, most recently the Hmong population. And it is really disheartening, but it's encouraging to see the disaggregation of the data. As Anthony said, this is a big part of the statistics that we look at in the education space, particularly with public policy. And I know the Coalition of Asian American Leaders, CAL, has been really active on seeking those changes at the legislature to ensure that this aggregation of Asian students continues to be front and center so that the Asian population statistics otherwise are not misleading and forming a different impression that is just inaccurate. So I really appreciate that you folks caught that early on. And I encourage you to continue doing that as we go forward.
Luz, I'm curious, is there a similar experience that happens, just because when we get into pan-ethnic markers, we lump a lot of folks in, and of course, you know, the data is much deeper than that. But I'm wondering if there's a similar thing happening in Latinx with that as a pan-ethnic marker that might give us very different stories.
You know, it's, I reflected on that as I was reading this, and as most attorneys would say, it depends. It depends on where the data is coming from. It depends on what the fields are. It depends on what area of the country, right? If we look at states such as Texas and California, Arizona, New Mexico, that were originally Mexico before the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, where that land was then ceded over to the U.S., we have Mexicans there who were the original inhabitants as indigenous Mexicans, right? Mm-hmm. Who have been there for centuries, versus you look at some of the other areas across the nation where immigration is newer to them, you know, like the Carolinas, for instance, or Rhode Island, where the gains are nowhere near where they need to be. And then we have an influx of Puerto Ricans who are citizens by birth. And there are certain concentrated enclaves of Puerto Ricans on the East Coast, for sure, New Jersey, New York, a larger influx that came to Florida as a result of Hurricane Maria. So there's just, you know, there are a lot of variables, right? And of course, California, where so much of the population is generationally originally from Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. You've got cities and towns all in Spanish, Los Angeles, the Angels, you know, Santa Clara, you know, St. Clair, right? Things of that sort. So there isn't one set answer, I'm sorry to say, because we are a very different diaspora, I think, based on location geographically, but also places where enclaves are really, really large across the U.S. and other states where we are really small, the Dakotas, for instance.
And we certainly, I don't know, maybe you're driving this way too, Anthony, but we certainly could have, you know, for the state's Black population, for example, we would have loved to break out the Somali population separate from, you know, other Black Minnesotans and maybe, you know, Liberian, other, you know, Ethiopia. We could have broken it out a number of different ways. And we would love to do additional research to be able to do that. But this was kind of as far as our current resources would allow us to break things out, because I'm sure there are some interesting differences there. If I could just for the listener's sake, you know, to illustrate this difference, though, between the Hmong and other Asian populations, just to give just one number on them, you know, when we ask how many people have experienced employment discrimination because of their race or ethnicity, the Hmong population, for example, said 42%. And the Asian excluding Hmong population, 29% said that they had experienced discrimination. So, you know, it's still large. 29% of the population, you know, receiving feeling that they've been discriminated against. That's large. But, you know, 42% is a really large number. And for that matter, you know, the indigenous 46% of the indigenous population, 62% of the Black population, you know, a majority in that case of the Black population saying that they've been discriminated against personally. I mean, these numbers to me were really, you know, not what you want to understand Minnesota to be about, you know.
Hey, Craig, and then with those questions, now, were those questions... I noticed on some of the questions, the way they were asked. So like on that question that you just talked about, I think that 42% are the people who responded by answering always.
Well, in this case, were
those questions more a yes, no?
Yeah, those were a yes, no. The precise wording was, do you believe you have ever personally experienced discrimination because you are, and then we give your racial or ethnic group in Minnesota. So you believe that you've ever experienced job discrimination because you are indigenous here in Minnesota, yes or no?
You've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Halee Lee with crew members Anthony Galloway, Don Eubanks, and Luz Maria Frias, and our special guest, Craig Helmstetter. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
So Craig, go ahead. Because I got one. I think you're going the same direction I'm going, Luz. Go ahead.
When we think about just the perception versus actual...
Come on, Luz.
Exactly.
You just can't escape the obvious here, which is in the white population. You know, you've got a multifold proportion of folks thinking or perceiving that they've been discriminated against. I mean, let's just look at employment for whites. It's at 38% of white folks believe that they or perceive that they were discriminated, but yet only 11% experience actual discrimination, racial or otherwise, in the workplace. I mean, we're talking a fraction, right? And then it gets even more so telling when you think about perception involving police, whites perceiving that they've been discriminated against. That was a pretty high number in my mind, which was 27%, but then actual was only 5%. I mean, we're talking really small numbers for folks who are who identify as white. And then housing perception that they've been discriminated against at 25%, but actual only 4%. And then voting, perceiving that you've been discriminated against as a white person, 14%, but then actual experiencing was only 5%. I mean, I guess I should start with the premise that discrimination of any sort is not something that is approved in our community or in our state or in our nation. But these numbers are really telling because there's such a big disconnect between the perception of white folks versus their actual experience of these. And the spread there, for from my just looking at these two charts, is substantially larger in terms of a gap than there are the gaps between those two categories across the BIPOC individual areas.
If I could make a quick response to what Luce just said. I think some of these, the responses from the whites that we surveyed are kind of intriguing. And that was another surprise for me, was just to see how many white Minnesotans perceive there to be discrimination against whites in the state. And then a smaller subset, but still a chunk of whites, you know, report actually feeling that they were discriminated against, say when they were applying for jobs. And we tried to further analyze this data to understand it a little bit more. And the thing that really popped out really was that there was a political difference. I think one of you already mentioned this a little bit, but for the job discrimination, for example, some white Minnesotans did say that they had experienced job discrimination because they were white, but it turns out that 13% of white Republicans reported being victims of racial discrimination when applying for jobs, compared to only 6% of white Democrats. So, you know, those are relatively smaller perceptions, but it's still the case, you know, the Republicans who are white, it was twice as common among that group than white Democrats. So there's some feeling, there's some relationship to political affiliation, mm-hmm. you know, white Republicans feeling that they've been wronged in some ways.
Well, there's so much to cover, and thank you so much, Craig, for sitting through it with us and listening. And I thought this was just such a great dialogue between all of us and sharing our experiences. I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota, and senior partner at Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I express are solely my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
I'm Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
And our guest?
I'm Craig Helmstetter, the first white guy to be a guest of Counter Stories podcast. That's my new claim to fame. Also.
Oh, that was a good
also
one.
I'm also the managing partner of the APM Research Lab. It's been my honor. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. This program is a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, the Other Media Group, and AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.